The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Stephen Scott and this is The Weekly Connect, your opportunity to talk about the issues that matter to you. And by golly, we got lots to hear from you this week. You've been talking to me non-stop and it's fantastic. Yeah, we're talking about all kinds of topics this week, including getting back into employment. Yeah, we've talked about this a few times in the show. Chris Reddington tells us the difference getting back into employment made to him. We'll hear from him later. Also coming up, a lot of you asking to talk about getting around safely. With all this talk of fixing the awful state of our roads, potholes, etc., our panel this week decided to sit down and talk about the issues more pertinent to them as blind or partially sighted people, such as the state of the UK's pavements, crossing the road safely, and the ongoing concern over parked cars on pavements. Plus, we hear from Cardiff not once, but twice this week on the programme. Yep, we find out about a new centre in Wales opening for blind and partially sighted people. And our Society of the Week also comes from Cardiff. That's all coming up on this week's The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect. The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
So welcome along to the programme once again. This is the programme that literally hands you the microphone and says, tell me what you're thinking. Yeah, that's what we do every single week here on The Weekly Connect. And no more is that evident than later when we hear our panel discussion where we did just that. We gave our microphone out to four blind and partially sighted people who wanted to tell us all about their experiences of getting around safely. We've also got lots of good emails to get through. We'll look forward to hearing them. But we kick off with news about television. Now, as you know, television is something which a lot of us enjoy. A lot of sighted people are always quite surprised that blind and partially sighted people even watch television. How can you enjoy telly if you can't see? Well, the answer is you can. The problem these days is that the actual boxes, the set-top box or the EPG, the electronic program guide, the way to watch telly, to find out what's on, isn't as accessible as it should be. Now, some companies are trying their best to make it more accessible, but one company is doing its bit to try and make more set-top boxes accessible by, well, quite simply, building their own. Mo is from Vitech Solutions, a company that is a family-run business that makes technology and sells technology for blind and partially sighted people. And Mo joined me and Sean Priest on a recent Tech Talk to talk about a survey that they're putting out there, asking you your opinion on whether or not you want an accessible set-top box. But first, Mo told me and Sean more about the company itself.
Vitech Solutions supply products and services for the visually impaired, obviously. Our main area that we started off supplying was computers, laptops and tablets at budget prices. So, for example, computers and laptops with accessibility software pre-installed start from £150 upwards, just to put people in the picture. And then we sort of expanded to supplying mobile phones, Android-based phones, Nokia phones, for people that, you know, require phones with talks, iPhones, training, technical support, that kind of thing. So we're trying to fill gaps in the markets where other people, where other companies basically fall slightly short, really. I mean, we don't sort of prioritize one product over the other. You know, for example, we don't sort of say, oh, you know, we only prioritize and train JAWS users. We train people using NVDA, Supernova Window Eyes, JAWS, yeah, whatever your screen access software is. So we don't prioritize. And one thing that came about from starting the company, we actually started servicing TVonix set-top boxes. Now, TVonix was a fantastic set-top box produced about 7 years ago by a company called TVonix, fully speech-enabled. Very nice menus, very big, you know, nice big remote control with big buttons. And loads of people have these boxes because they are an IBU to sell them. But as time went on, the boxes were starting to fail and, you know, discs were starting to fail inside the boxes. So for the past year, we've actually been servicing these boxes for quite a few of RNIB's customers. And the general feedback that we received from those customers is, why doesn't somebody produce a new set-top box? Because, yes, you know, we've got TVs from the likes of Samsung, Panasonic, Sony, but, you know, those TVs, although they include talking functions, they often fall short. For example, it might only read part of the EPG, or it might only read, you know, part of the TV's menus. You know, you go into a menu on some of the older Samsung TVs and it says, this portion is not accessible. So obviously that's not really helpful to people that are VI. Mm. And, you know, in terms of recording TV as well, you know, yeah, you you know, their argument was, well, you can plug a pen drive in to record TV programs. Well, some people don't even know what a pen drive is, you know, and even if they do plug one in, again, you know, access to those recordings is tricky via the remotes. So our aim, ultimately, is to develop a set-top box which is fully accessible, built specifically for the visually impaired from the ground up and maintained by a company that cares from the point of view of somebody visually impaired. I'm totally blind myself, you know, and I would like a solution which I could use with Freeview and possibly with other services like Freesat or Sky. I'm not sure how cooperative Sky are going to be, so I can't say too much on that at the moment. But, you know, we are looking into it. And what we basically want from people is to fill out a very short survey. You know, it's available on our website, and I'm sure we can get onto the contact details later on. Yeah. But we're basically trying to find out how much interest there is from the wider VI community regarding such a box.
I think this is interesting because it's something that Sean and I have talked about in the show umpteen times. And Sean, you've still got a TV Onyx box, don't you?
I have, yeah. Mine's still going. I do need to turn it off and on a good few times a day as it gets slower and slower. Mm. But it is so accessible. It works so well. The library, the EPG, everything about it is so accessible. And the very fact that that's the only accessible Freeview box that's available that I know of. And, you know, even as you said, Mo, it's not even available anymore. That's a pretty bad state to be in, that, you know, there is no alternative at the moment, at least one that I can find.
Yeah, because we've got these companies like, as you say, Samsung and Panasonic, where we've seen some great strides towards, you know, more accessible EPGs. And, you know, however good or bad they are, it just seems to me that it seems awfully complicated for us as blind or partially sighted people just to record Coronation Street. I mean, come on. You know, it can't be that difficult.
And,
you
exactly. Know, it's the 21st century, yeah. Steve. You know, it's just ridiculous. Isn't it? Because, you know, it's almost like these companies are saying, well, we've made provision for accessibility. You know, we've made the TV talk. So because we've ticked that box, we don't need to take it any further. And when you contact their customer service teams, they're a bit vague. You know, it's, oh, we're not too sure who you can contact to provide feedback, or, yeah, we'll get around to it in the next software update, but it's not a major priority. And, you know, it's like VI people are getting a raw deal in that sense. You know, we just get shoved to the bottom of the pile. It's pretty disgraceful, really.
It's very
in this
true.
Day and age.
Okay, so can't you just rip apart an old TV Onyx box, figure out what it was made of, and make another one?
Yeah, that's what we're essentially trying to do. Part of the issue that we're experiencing is intellectual property. So the RNIB actually bought intellectual property rights to the box.
Right,
I'm not going to go into too many legal details, but, you know, we can't really reuse the TV Onyx brand for legal reasons. Yeah. It may also be that we have to possibly rebrand our own company, you know, to actually sell the TV Onyx successfully, because Vitek is quite a common name, really. So it may be that your customers start seeing a rebranding in the coming months, really, to, you know, to rebrand the company. But that's beside the point. At the moment, we want to try and see, you know, grab as many figures as possible from people, because obviously the more people that fill out our survey, the better, because then we can justify to manufacturers and say, look, you know, we've got 2,000 people interested in this. You know, can we please get on with production, you know, as opposed to, you know, fighting our corner as VI people.
I guess the question is, if the TV Onyx box wasn't successful, if blind people either weren't buying it or it wasn't as available as it could be for whatever reason, you know, how do you know that this will be a success? How do you know this is even something that blind people want?
Well, put it this way, we actually managed to get stock of TV Onyx boxes, and they sold within a week. You know, from, you know, people are contacting us literally on a weekly basis, asking if we've got TV Onyx boxes in stock, because they're getting fed up with the amount of TVs that are actually inaccessible. They're buying new TVs. Somebody contacted us a few weeks ago and said, I've just spent nearly £1,000 on a television and it's not reading out options to me. Why is this? Mm. And I said, well, because Samsung haven't made the effort, you know. And also, these boxes aren't just going to be for TV, you know, for audio described TV and recording TV. We're actually going to start incorporating modern catch-up services into the TV. You know, why should visually impaired people be left out in the cold when it comes to going on Netflix or Amazon or BBC iPlayer or 4OD? Sighted people can buy a set-top box off the high street and go onto all these services, and there's no restriction for them. So that could be a selling point.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it's something that you want people to get in touch with and share their views. And that's what's really interesting about this. You know, you're not just going ahead and making it. You're actually asking people, right, what do you want? I mean, tell us a bit about this survey. What do you intend to get from it? Is it a question and answer, or is it just tell us your views? How does it work?
Okay, the way it works is the initial survey allows you to register your interest. So what we're asking people to do at this stage is say, look, would you like to buy the box? you know, so a yes or no answer. And once you've, if you tick yes, then there's an option to fill in your email address and telephone number. What we're going to do is send out a mass email to people with a second survey in a few months' time, once manufacturers are in place and that kind of thing, to say, what do you actually want from this box? And that will be a much longer survey, but that is an opportunity for visually impaired people to actually say what they want. There might be a feature that we've not even thought of that somebody comes up with. And, you know, in the past, when companies develop products, we see this an awful lot now in the VI world, in my opinion. Companies develop a product. For example, it could be a mobile phone with a keypad. They develop the product, it's released, and when it gets into the hands of VI people, it doesn't read out, for example, letters that you've typed when you delete them, you know, and stuff like that. And the phones just fall short. And people haven't been asked what they want from that phone. They haven't been asked, oh, do you want to go on the internet with it? Do you want a camera? You know, it's just a product that's been churned out without any market research or minimal market research. And that's it. You know, we want to try and involve people more because it saves us time as well in the long run.
Well, absolutely. You don't want to make a product no one's going to buy. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But one thing I'm interested in, though, is that, as we all know, the majority of people who are blind or partially sighted often lose their sight later in life, so they are older age. Is there a chance that the people who you're trying to get to ask, you know, are you interested in this, you know, you might not be able to get to those people who are actually screaming out possibly at the radio right now saying, yes, this is exactly what I want, but I've got no ability to get online to tell you about it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, what we're encouraging people to do is use our contact details. So we actually have a telephone helpline as well as a website. So ring us up. Don't think just because you can't go online, you can't fill this out. Give us a ring and we'll gladly fill out the survey on your behalf over the phone, you know, because we can register your interest that way. And then if, for example, you want us to involve you in development, we can give you a call when the time comes and say, you know, what do you actually want to see? What do you want it to do?
Okay, all sounds good. Tell us the contact details then and how people can A, get in touch with you by phone, for example, or get in touch on and fill out the survey online.
Okay, you can give us a call on 0343-289-7501. That's 0343-289-7501, and that's a local rate call number, so you won't get charged any extra by your phone provider, but I would urge people to double-check their call charges anyway. Or you can get in touch with us by going to www.vits.org.uk. So V for Victor, I for India, T for Tango, S for Sierra, .org.uk. And the link is actually on the homepage under the heading, We Need Your Help.
That was Moore there speaking to me and Sean on Tech Talk, which you can listen to on Audio Boom and also on air on RNIB Connect Radio Tuesdays at 1 o'clock. And it's really good that they're doing this survey because it's giving an opportunity for us as blind and partially sighted people to have our say on this technology. And, you know, is it something we even want? Is it something we need? And if it is, then what do you want from it? So get your answers into the survey. Check out Vitex Solutions online. VITS is what to search for online. This is the Weekly Connect. Good to have your company. Lots of you getting in touch about a topic we've visited once or twice on the programme, and that is getting into employment. You know, one of the big challenges for a lot of blind and partially sighted people is finding a job and then keeping that job. Well, Chris Reddington's kind of been on the scale with all of it, really, and he told us about the difference getting back into employment made to him. This is Chris's story.
Hello, my name is Chris Reddington, and 18 months ago, I was left stranded on a platform somewhere near Chester. I had no idea where I was. My colleagues had left me and abandoned me and gone home. At that moment in time, I realised that I never wanted to work again. I wasn't right for the working world, and that I was unsuitable. I was one of the many blind and partially sighted people in the UK who was unsuitable for work. The next day I was offered a voluntary exit from the company who I was working for, and I gladly took it, thinking that I was incapable of working. I then proceeded to spend the next few weeks looking over many, many job applications that I decided I could not do, after which time I contacted Action and spoke to a guy called Peter Inman at Action in Manchester. Peter kind of helped me. He listened to me, and he gave me the time I needed to reevaluate my situation, reevaluate what I wanted from my life. And I realized that I did want to work. I realized that it was really important that I was working, and really important that I was doing something for society. And he empowered me to really start looking seriously at applications, and to really start to begin to think about working again. And it was him who first helped me to put my first application together since losing that job, and since having a terrible experience. I was unsuccessful. I was told that I just missed out on it. It almost destroyed me again. I was in a very shaky position. But Peter sort of held me tight and told me to keep applying and keep applying. Over time, I gradually regained some confidence. But I wasn't so good in the interviews, I found out. And so I went over to Carly, who gave me some interview support, told me how to dress in an interview, showed me how to wear a suit to an interview, how to walk in and how to introduce myself. I also learned how to empower myself before an interview and how to prepare properly. And these skills were really, really useful when I went to several interviews that I was getting. Unfortunately, again, I was unsuccessful, and we realized that I wasn't empowered myself. I didn't believe I could get those jobs. And it was then that Action suggested that I went on a pre-employment course. The pre-employment course is an opportunity to empower yourself into employment, to give yourself a boost that you may need just to understand how good and how skilled you really are, and to understand the things that you might not necessarily see about yourself. I went on the pre-employment course and I really enjoyed it. It was fantastic. I learned that I can lead people, that I'm a very good communicator, and that my strength lies in those two things, but also in my creative abilities. I learned that I'm a passionate writer, and that the skills I learned during my degree are skills, and that I can sell them in an interview. The pre-employment course also showed me how to sell those in an interview. It was at that time that an admin vacancy at Action in Manchester came up, and I applied. And the head of operations for the local team interviewed me and gave me the admin receptionist role, which meant that I was talking to clients every day, taking calls from people who had been in much the same situation as myself, and listening to people and working and communicating with the Manchester office as a whole. I really enjoyed it. I loved it. I really loved it. It was a fantastic opportunity for me to gain confidence in the working world, to regain all those things that I'd lost about myself, and to understand that I could do a job fully and properly. I learned that I am a desirable employee, and that I should be employed to the highest of my ability. I also learned that it's really, really, really interesting life, the life of work, and that the people around me can support me to do even better. It was through the support that I then applied for a job as an eye clinic liaison officer in Cardiff. And in the fullest of my empowerment, I went along to the interview and showed them what I can do, showed my skills, talked about what I could do, and was creative with my interview. I used the skills that Linda, Emma, Carly, and Peter had showed me, and I was able to get that interview in the interview and then got the job, which was incredible. And I spent the first few weeks of my job roaming around Wales, really enjoying myself. I couldn't have done that job without access to work, and Linda and Emma, particularly in the Manchester office, helped me to get that access to work, helped me to understand what is the best way I can use my access to work, and how I can improve my access to work as well. It was a fantastic way for me to learn about access to work, and I now am able to do my job to the best of my ability as well, which is fantastic. I couldn't have done it without Action, and I now understand that I am a professional. I'm very good at what I can do, and that all the skills I've learned throughout my working life, I can use day to day to help people with sight loss live a better and fuller life, the same as I did.
Chris there with a rather honest account of his story. You know, confidence and lack of it can be very debilitating to a blind or partially sighted person. Well done to Chris for getting back on his feet and getting out there into the job market and finding a job. Well done, Chris, and thank you for telling us your story. Nadia has been in touch on the email and, interestingly, following last week's programme on employment, she says, I've just discovered the Weekly Connect. Your programme on employment is rather appropriate given the week I've had. I've been moved from the support group to the work-related activities group for those claiming ESA, that's Employment and Support Allowance. I haven't worked for a while. I'm totally blind and I have other problems which make working difficult. I resent the fact that the government are in effect ordering me to work without having any idea about the issues I face, namely the ignorance of the people I'm forced to deal with. A case in point was when I rang the job centre, explained I was blind, and they told me to write down a number and that I'd know it was them when they called because their number would flash up on my phone. It's like they hear but don't listen. Sometimes you feel like you're banging your head against the wall. The so-called work coaches haven't dealt with visually impaired people. They aren't educated when it comes to disabilities, and neither are many employers. I've had an employer insist their company didn't put anyone with a disability at a disadvantage, and then inform me one of their essential requirements is manning a security camera. The government just aren't disability aware, and until they are, I don't think the DWP is qualified to make such decisions. I'm not saying visually impaired people shouldn't work, far from it, just that it's not as cut and dried as the DWP seem to think. I'm also at a loss to understand why they've taken away my disability support. Whether I find a job, I'll still be blind. Regards, Nadia. Well, Nadia, thank you for getting in touch and telling us your story, and hopefully, one way or another, it works itself out for you. But yeah, it's a very difficult topic, isn't it? Do keep your emails coming in, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. More of those to come on the programme.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect Magazine, our monthly membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from a dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555. The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Good to have you company. This is The Weekly Connect and I'm Stephen Scott. Hello. Thank you for getting in touch as you do. And one thing that you've wanted to talk about this week is getting around safely. Now, with all the talk on fixing the awful state of our roads, all the potholes we hear about in the news near enough every week, our panel this week decided to sit down and talk about the issues more pertinent to them as blind and partially sighted young people, such as the state of the UK's pavements, crossing the road safely, and the ongoing concern over parked cars on pavements. Big issue, something we'll be talking about a lot this hour. But first, let's hear from four young people who decided to get around the microphone and talk about this very issue. Over to you guys.
My name is Stephen Sutherland. I'm in the Connect Radio and I'm also part of the Connect group. Today I'm here with a couple of guests and we're going to be talking about roads and pavements and street furniture. I would like to start by introducing our guests. So if my first person to my right can say their name.
Hello Connect Radio, I am Ross from Glasgow.
Hello everyone, it's Hussein Patra representing the Northeast of Scotland from Aberdeen.
Hello everyone, it's Amanda Butt, also representing the northeast of Scotland, living in Aberdeen.
Excellent, thank you very much for joining us here on Connect Radio. So as I mentioned just 2 seconds ago there, we're going to be talking about roads, pavements and street furniture. One very difficult obstacle, which I'm sure we all agree is quite a tricky thing for people with visual impairments. My own experiences with it is quite tricky, where I tend to hurt my ankles on uneven pavements. I've also snapped symbol canes and things and guide canes many times. I would like to ask what would your experiences would be. So who would like to start?
Well, I think one big problem with pavements is the state of the pavement in general. They never seem to get the same level of attention as roads, but also, of course, got many different types of obstructions that can take place on pavements. I live on quite a quiet street, and it's actually safer for me to walk on the road rather than on the pavement. Not a precedent which I think many people would want to follow.
Mm-hmm. Ross, would you like to go?
Yeah, well, the biggest problem I have is with street furniture, especially if you're walking down like a high street and there's lots of restaurants and bars and they have tables and signs and stuff outside the door. It's very annoying when you're walking down and you trip and bang into things. It's not great.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amanda, have you?
Yes, all sorts of different things. With the state of the pavements, canes get stuck in sort of holes and bits and pieces, and you can sort of ruin them. As regards street furniture, that is a real obstacle with wheelie bins and, like Ross said, sort of things that are in cafes, or, you know, that are outside sort of cafes, like tables and chairs. And, of course, one of the worst bugbears is cars and lorries parked on pavements.
Absolutely, but fortunately, hopefully in the next couple of years or so, something may be done about that one, because there is currently a parking on pavements bill being processed through the Scottish Parliament. So hopefully that will draw attention to the impact that this has, and hopefully we may have legislation on street furniture too, who knows?
You mentioned there about Scottish Parliament legislation. Is there anything in your own view that you think could potentially be of use to avoid these kind of obstacles?
Well, I think general awareness to begin with by obviously businesses and private residents as well. You know, everybody, for example, needs to take their bins out in the morning, and, you know, businesses do want to advertise. But understanding that, you know, where possible, if we can try and keep the pavement environment as clear as we can. And I think for drivers as well, the roadway is usable for parking, and that way we have equal right of way for cars and pedestrians. I just don't think that it's right that as pedestrians we should have impeded access. So I think there's room on both sides to work together on this, but maybe it just needs a slight steer from the powers that be.
Going back to the issue that I face quite a lot is like walking into things that are outside bars and shops and things. Also, something else that is a big, big issue, and I think that at some point I've spoken to everyone that's here today about this, is pillars in city centres. The pillars that you get in streets are usually the same colour as the pavement, so they're really no help, even though they're supposed to be there to help guide people who are visually impaired. They do not help, and I think that a solution to that would be to have some kind of colour at the top of them to help people see them, because they're not good.
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly options that could be explored for the future. One thing I've always found rather irritating is when people decide to leave rubbish bags on the ground that are full of rubbish rather than actually putting them in bins.
That is extremely irritating.
Not to mention not nice in the smell department either.
Exactly, yeah. It's not exactly the most nicest of sights or smells for people even with non-visual impairments. So it's something I've noticed. It's predominantly businesses that tend to do this. They leave all their waste around about bins rather than actually inside them. For me, can be quite hazardous. I've numerous times got my cane stuck in bags, which can knock me off my stride sometimes.
It reminds me of an announcement that was being played at a bus stop in Aberdeen a few years back, and it said, "Aberdeen is our city, keep it clean and beautiful." And it just suddenly struck me, talking about clear pavements and clear access ways, just how literally that can be taken, and it may be something that people might find worth thinking about.
Absolutely.
How do you find when you are crossing roads for, say, for example, the lights system? Do you find that easy enough, or is there any issues with that you might know of?
Well, I find it quite difficult to know when, what colour the lights are. Thankfully, though, when I do travel, I am usually with other people, so they can obviously tell me when. But a fear that I have is that if I am walking somewhere on a busy road, I cannot see the colours that are on it. Sometimes there are traffic lights that will beep, but not all of them do, which is really not helpful at all.
And has Hussein and Amanda also found anything of similar?
Yeah, my biggest problem, Stephen, is sometimes just finding a crosslink controller in the first place. You know, whether it has tactile or audio feedback, really doesn't help if you can't activate it. And it was interesting that last month I was told of a project called Neatbox, which, to keep it short, is someone has developed an app which, by installing a fairly low-cost kit into road crossing, you can use your phone to activate that. So it takes a lot of the hassle and the frustration out of finding the crossing point, especially if nobody else is there. But obviously, technology isn't the answer to everything. I think there's quite often a lack of standardization between crossings. And the biggest thing which I've started finding recently is where you have crossings that are close together, it's sometimes difficult to know which one's actually beeping at you.
Absolutely. And I must admit, as well as not being able to find the crossings, some of the lights are in an awful state. People sort of take bits out of them. You know, when you're actually crossing the lights, the actual bit that you put your finger in to press the thing, it's absolutely, the lights are getting into an awful mess.
Yeah.
And it's something that's really, really not good.
Absolutely. And one thing I found in Glasgow is that people seem to think it's funny to stick on stickers on the bit that says wait, which can be quite quite annoying.
Or chewing gum.
And things like that. When you put stickers on the bit that says wait, you don't actually know if the button's then working, if you can't see the bit that says wait.
Trust me, Stephen, it's not just in Glasgow that we have that problem.
Do you find that that's an issue that you also have in the northern part of Scotland as well?
Yeah. Yes, we do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We had someone from the council come to talk to our local society for the blind in Aberdeen, and we asked them this question as well, and they said that whilst they do undertake maintenance, obviously they can only do it so often, but it got me to thinking whether we don't need to have some kind of easier to access reporting system for, you know, anything related to the street environment that's causing a problem for visually impaired or non-visually impaired. So if there's a particular pavement that's in a bad state, who do you actually go to report that? For example, if a set of traffic lights isn't working, there's a clear section on the council website that tells you where to phone. Or sometimes if a crossing isn't working. But there's nothing to say if you've got a pothole in the pavement or there's some slabs that have been, you know, minced up, who to go to get that looked at.
Yeah. See, there was one thing that's on my mind. There was the pavement setting. See, before you come to the end of a road, they've got a certain design on the pavements.
Do you mean the bubble?
I'm not entirely sure of the name of it, but you know, the road changes and they've got to be... Is it bubbles, is it called?
Tactile
pavement, that's the one, yeah. Do you find that at all useful? Because I do know a lot of people are unaware of how that works. How's your view on it?
Yeah, I mean, it is useful because obviously then you know when you're coming up to a road. So yeah, it is quite useful.
I just hope that it can be used in the right place because sometimes the tactiles are close together and if it's a very broad pavement, it can be difficult to work out where the tactile starts and finishes to orientate yourself to either cross the pavement or cross the road.
And the other thing is that some of the tactile pavements, certainly in Aberdeen, if it's wet, then they're very slippery.
They are indeed, yeah. So again, it was another thing that sprung to mind, is that they can be quite tricky to walk on if it's been raining or if it's ice or snow. It can be quite difficult. Ross, would you like to come in with any of you?
Something that came into my mind there that I just remembered is I think this is, it's pretty much everywhere where there's so many cars parked, and when you're like trying to get across the road, you sometimes have to go between parked cars.
Yeah.
That's a really big issue for me, especially as I obviously can't see round the cars to see if there's something coming. That's a really, really big issue that I think needs to, I think that there needs to be a lot more parking structures available to deal with that. So
do you think that it's probably more beneficial that there's like parking restrictions, or that it maybe should be that they're not allowed to park on the likes of corners of roads, so that when people are walking they can actually see the oncoming traffic rather than having to practically walk out in front to the middle of the road before they can see where the traffic is?
Because during mobility lessons and stuff, I was told with a cane, like, never to walk through parked cars, but sometimes you literally have no option because there's no space for you to cross, but you have to. And obviously, with being visually impaired, that's a really, well, it's a big risk for anyone, but especially if you are visually impaired and you don't know what's coming. So, yeah.
Has anybody who have walked, say, across the road between lights ever had any injuries or falls due to the states of the roads?
I've never had an injury, but I've had quite a few close shaves. But something that just struck me, you know, just talking about the same topic, is increasingly councils are making use of powers to create shared spaces. So that is where vehicles, cars, buses share the same space as pedestrians, and you often find these in town centres. And one of the side effects that is obviously reduces the amount of available parking space and pushes a lot of the traffic into side roads to create exactly that problem that Ross has just told us. And I just generally think that as time goes on, town centres are becoming a more and more dangerous place, especially for elderly folk, notwithstanding people with a visual impairment, even people that are just walking slowly. Sometimes you can have quite a few near misses of people tearing around corners very quickly or crossing just not giving you enough time to get across.
So earlier we were talking about the UK and the state of the pavements in the UK. Could we go back to that, and could you tell us any experiences that you've had with maybe injuries that you may have experienced?
In Glasgow City Centre, I have been in situations where I have tripped and fallen. Thankfully, not hurt myself too seriously because I've been with my friend, and 99% of the time, someone usually catches me or I fall into someone, but there have been occasions where I have fallen because I've not seen that the pavements are uneven. And I've noticed that especially in sort of side streets, it's worse, but also on main streets, which is really bad because it's a main street, there's like loose paving and things like that, and I've tripped going across the road on the pavement and stuff as I'm crossing the road, so yeah.
Yeah, Ross, I mean, it's a good point that you even mentioned there with the side streets, because they don't seem to matter as much, and the likes of cobbles can be tricky to walk on as well, particularly if you get cymbal canes or a guide cane.
I think as a long cane user, maybe my cane offers me a bit of protection. But one thing I notice when walking along pavements is where the pavement is uneven or there are gaps between the slabs, very often the ball tip of the cane gets caught against the edge of a slab that's slightly raised. And that brings you to a sudden halt, but you also get the cane digging into the centre of your stomach, simply as a side effect of the way you've been taught to use the cane. But perhaps that's a different issue. As I say, fortunately up until now I've been lucky, and touch wood may that continue, but I have often tripped up a curb when moving onto the pavement where the surface of the road has been uneven, and it's led to a slight deviation in a gradient moving up onto the pavement.
Yeah, I've also sort of done that. You know, you've used your cane and sort of it's sort of got into a bit of uneven thing and it sticks in it. And I mean, one time I nearly fell over, but I just managed to sort of catch myself. But it's the kind of shock you feel when it happens, and you just think, oh my goodness, you know, it's horrible.
Moment. Yeah, I've experienced that a few times myself where I've walked into main roads. And there's been a slight ditch in the road, and my ankle just seems to keel over because I'm unaware of the difference in the level of the ground. I've had one severe injury where I badly sprained my ankle. I thought I'd broken it, so thankfully I didn't. But it was quite horrendous, and it was painful.
And it just really makes you think, doesn't it? You know, when we're trying to empower people to get out more and more on their own independently, and the state of the pavements almost seems to be working against you. And I'm just thinking of those who may perhaps have an incident and it may significantly damage their confidence to get out. And I wonder, is that really the sort of environment we want to be keeping at the moment?
It definitely isn't. And we really need to sort of try and stop this from happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's us coming to the end of our time. So I'd like to thank both Ross, Hussein and Amanda for joining us at Connect Radio. My name's Stephen Sutherland.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There you go. We literally hand the mic to you and you tell us your story. That is exactly what the Weekly Connect is all about. Thank you to the guys there for getting in touch and talking about that issue, which we will be returning to later. This is the Weekly Connect, and remember, we're on Audioboom, we're on the podcast app if you've got an Apple smartphone, and we're also on iTunes as well. Now, there's a new centre for blind and partially sighted people opening this week in Wales. Let's go now to our community reporter in Wales, Glenys Hughes, who has more. Glenys.
I'm at the Vision Support Centre in Chester, and I'm talking to Miriam. And Miriam, can you start us all by saying what your role is in this organisation?
Yes, I'm the chief executive of the charity.
Wonderful.
And we are a regional charity. We've been around a long time in Chester. We celebrated 140 years last year.
Fantastic.
But we cover 7 different local authorities across Cheshire and Runcorn and North East Wales. So we cover Wrexham, Flintshire, Denbighshire and Conwy.
Now, I believe you're having a very exciting day on the 7th of February.
Tuesday, yes.
So, and we've called this event the Prostatin Sight Day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you tell me a little bit more about this exciting day?
Well, it all stems from the fact that we're opening a new centre in Prostatin on that day, a sight loss centre, which is a shop in Prostatin High Street, which is a resource centre. For people with sight loss to come along to speak to somebody, to find information, advice, and also to access kit and equipment, as probably everybody out there is aware. There are a lot of gadgets, a lot of kit, and it's nice to be able to experience it, to look at it, to see if it's the right thing for you before you actually spend your money on it.
So I can try before I buy?
You can try before you buy,
oh,
yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
So if I came there, what's the most popular equipment people ask for?
Well, it's everything. Possibly the talking clocks and watches, I would think, are still always the perennial.
Gosh.
Always the perennial. But we go through from some magnifiers, the shades, the glass, the dark glasses, through to the real technology stuff now, of course, that we do, the CCTVs, and the digital technology, which is very much more in demand now. Yeah, so we're opening a new centre in Prostatin.
Excellent. So this centre in Prostatin now, you're going to have your sight day. Run me through the day. How is that day going to flow?
Okay. Well, we've engaged with the town council and the mayor of Prostatin, Councillor Bob Murray, they've been very, very supportive to us. And it's sort of morphed from being just an opening of a centre to the whole town being involved in a day to raise awareness of sight loss. We've got exhibitions taking place across the town. The mayor himself is going to do a blindfold walk with guide dog at 1 o'clock, starting from Nant Hall Road Church in Prostatin. We've got an exhibition on there going on from 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. We also have an exhibition going on at the Parish Church Hall. We will also have a stand at the library and at Tesco's, again from about 10 until 3. Both our mobile information units will be in the town all day. One at Prostatin Library and one in Park Prostatin, which is the new retail park.
Excellent. So on the vision support mobile unit, what will I find there?
The mobile unit is kind of a mobile version of the new resource centre, really. Again, you've got all the kit and equipment. You have information about eye conditions, all sorts of different relevant organisations that you might be useful for people. And the advisor, obviously, who works on the unit, is somebody on both our units, informed, a listening ear, somebody that you can go and take advice from.
Thank you very much indeed. So I think you would recommend everyone to come to the Prostatin Sight Day on 7th of February. Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to have further information, they can have a look at your website.
www.visionsupport.org.uk. The new centre itself is open officially from 12 noon on Tuesday the 7th of February. It will be open more regularly from a Monday to Thursday from 10 o'clock until 3. And the new phone number is 01745 472558 for the new centre in Prestatyn.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. I hope it's a astounding success.
You're welcome. It should be a really good day.
Diolch yn fawr.
Thanks, Glenys. And just a reminder, our Society of the Week is coming up, and it's also from Wales, yes, in Cardiff in particular. We'll hear about that association a little bit later as we continue with our Society of the Week this week on The Weekly Connect. Just turning to our emails here, and Colin Dunscombe has been in touch. Hi, Colin. He says, I've listened with interest to the podcast about holidays and was dismayed to hear that once again the closure of the Vision Hotels is back on the agenda. We were told that large sums of money would need to be spent to keep these hotels at a high standard, and this at a time when many of these facilities are underused. If those running the hotels are serious about trying to attract a greater footfall, they might perhaps consider an increase in advertising, as, to my knowledge, the only current advertising is through hotels.com. I know that this would mean some expense, but we're now in an era where holidays at home are becoming more popular, and it looks like the cost of holidays abroad could rise as a result of Brexit. So such an investment in advertising could well be worthwhile. Best wishes from Colin Dunscombe. Well, Colin, thank you for getting in touch and telling us your thoughts. You can do the same. The Weekly Connect at rnib.org.uk. Now, lots of you this week wanting to tell us your thoughts on the state of the UK's pavements. Lots of you commenting on this. Here's some of your comments this week.
Some of the streets are absolutely awful. I think a lot of it, in some parts anyway, when you're walking along, it's down to heavy vehicles damaging the curbs, mounting the pavements, or cars stopping on the pavements, which is a big thing, and the damaged manhole covers, and then they stick up. There are potholes, but when you get used to your area where you go, as a blind person, you do need to know in your mind, as well as pavements, branches, everything, cars, one are normally in the same places. Sometimes it is a nuisance. You can easily, which I have gone over on my ankle a few times, through either potholes on the path and loose curbs. And if you go into the city centre where I live, it's a lot of it is like pedestrianised, shared service. And it's and quite a new service, actually. It's probably only been down a couple of years for the, well, it's been done now for absolutely loads of times replaced. And I've said this time now it will be a lot better, but you go along and you can feel the brick paving blocks moving underneath your feet, and your feet go over sometimes. It's shocking. And again, it's because heavy vehicles go along there as well as pedestrians, and it does cause a problem. So, yeah, and I've been to different parts of the country. You can say the same. Like I go to Weston-super-Mare, for instance, or Birmingham, which is a lot better, Birmingham, in the main city centre. But you go to residential areas, I never see anybody tarmacking the paths or anything anymore. It's been years, come to think of it, when I noticed a pavement being repaired, you know, especially if they've done gas repairs or pipe replacements, and then it sinks, and then that leaves big holes in the pavement.
So I live in an estate that was built in the 60s, so the pavements are tarmac, but the tarmac's pretty worn in lots of areas. Mobility officer came around for an assessment with me the other day, and as I'm trying to improve my mobility skills, you know, she took me out, she let me walk around, she sort of assessed me, and the first thing she did was change the tip on the cane. She had a little roller tip, I think they call it a marshmallow tip or something like that there, to more of a, there must be a tennis ball size tip. And that made a significant difference. as in it wasn't catching anymore in every little hole or crack in the tarmac. So the pavements aren't the best. Of course, it could be better. It could be newly laid tarmac, which would be lovely. But the tip on the cane, for me at least, has made a significant difference. More of an issue around where I am, at least, is people parking on the actual pavements. They pull the cars up and onto the pavements to park the cars, which is an absolute nightmare.
Thanks for your views on getting around this week. Yeah, a lot of you talking about that, and it's a subject I'm sure we'll be coming back to in the coming months. This is the Weekly Connect. Almost time up. Wow, what a quick hour that's been. We're going to now turn to our Society of the Week, though, before we go, and this one is in Cardiff.
My name is Sarah Craig Hancock. I'm 45 years old and I've been involved with Cardiff Institute for the Blind since 1997. Originally was a volunteer and I joined the Shand Pioneers, which incidentally used to be a group for people under 60 to do activities. But over the years, the emphasis has changed on that because the majority of the people that are in the group now are actually over 60. So it's now open. It hasn't got an age limit. I then was offered a job by Cardiff Institute in 1998, and initially I was working as a transport coordinator organising TransCall, which was a subsidised, voluntary-led transport system within Cardiff and the Vale of Glamorgan. That is, as far as I'm aware, still running. I then changed my role slightly and became a club coordinator. I was responsible for the Thursday Club, which was a predominantly club for the elderly that met on a Thursday and had a lunch, and they did a raffle and they would play bingo. There were lots of people in that club. I was responsible for that. Also some other clubs like the Evening Club, which used to meet on a Monday evening. That was a bit like the Shand Pioneers, but it had no age limit. Also there was a few clubs that used to meet every now and again, like the Art Club that used to meet every other Wednesday, and the Music Club, which used to meet once a month. I was responsible for those as well. I left the Institute in 2001, but since then I've still remained a member of the Pioneers, and occasionally I've been invited to other groups that have been running on a temporary basis. I also go to the women's group that meets once a month, and the Institute do a remarkable job because when I worked there, there were about 12 to 15 of us, whereas now there's literally only Teresa and Michelle and Craig that are doing the jobs of 12 to 15 people. So it's incredible how hard they work, and yet the service is still excellent.
My name is Susan Evans and I've been a member since the 1990s. My sight condition is retinal dystrophy, which causes me severe light sensitive, short-sightedness and colour blind. Cardiff Institute for the Blind. It's helped me in lots of ways. Builds confidence. I come in as a volunteer as well as a member. It's like a family community, to be honest with you. The girls that do their jobs, they're like family as well. They're friendly. I go to different clubs, garden club. But from April until about October, depending on the weather, we have the garden club every Friday morning, which is really enjoyable. We plant seeds and then we see it growing, and people go there every day to water it. And obviously when we're down there, we water them as well. And it's just a nice get together. Some people, more elderly or severe sight loss, can't help at all, but they just sit around and have a chat anyway. We have cups of teas there, and it's generally, it's very friendly and a nice place to be. I go to the Pioneers, which is social evenings and sometimes day trips out and stuff.
I've got quite a few eye conditions: glaucoma, microophthalmia, nystagmus, and congenital cataracts. I was very lucky because
By the age of 14, I didn't have any sight at all for 2 years. Could just literally see grey. And because I had nothing to lose, I went to Cork in Southern Ireland, and my parents paid for me to have an eye operation, which was pioneered in America and still wasn't available on the NHS. I don't even know if it's available now. And I had that operation, and there was a very small chance of me getting sight back, but I was lucky I got some sight back, just colours and shapes. But compared to nothing at all, it was amazing. So when I was 16 until now, I've been able to see some colours and shapes and read with a magnifier. And to be honest, I'm quite happy with that level of sight. I really find that that level is great for me. The only problem I have, obviously, is navigating the environment, and that's where I would like to either be able to see more. But, you know, this is what I'm used to, so again, I'm fine with that.
I come in as a volunteer. I bring around different people, telling them about the clubs that are coming up that week or the following week. And I also do contact line, because we contact people just to see basically how they are in everyday life.
Definitely the clubs have enriched my life. Over the years, the Pioneers has done an awful lot of different activities, as well as meeting for meals and quizzes. On a regular basis, we've also done lots of diverse things. My main interest is horse riding, and the Pioneers have come riding with me on several occasions. Some of the activities are far beyond me, things like canoeing. They've done quad biking, assault course type activities, sailing. So it's very user-led, if you like, because now there is quite limited staff involvement just due to resources. So it's very much led by the members for the members. And so it's depended on what the members really feel is appropriate at that particular time. The Institute, by moving to Jones Court, obviously when a building is moved, there's always initial reservations. People think that it's going to be different or not as accessible. And the building itself is very accessible. The staff are very accessible and the volunteers.
And there you go, another Society of the Week. If you would like to nominate a society, then please do get in touch. You can email us theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. I know lots of you listen to the show at different times of the week, so thank you for doing that, and thank you for continuing to support this programme. It is your programme. This is the place where you can come and talk about the issues that really matter to you. And as you have heard this week, we literally gave you the microphone. We're giving you it. Giving it for free. Well, we do take it back at the end, though, because it is ours. But we will be back, of course, with more of your views next week. Just a quick programme point. Just be aware that there's a new survey out by BT. If you're interested in audio description on demand, then do listen out to our other show, Tech Talk, because we're going to be talking all about that. And you can get involved in this survey as well. We'll maybe talk a bit more about it on next week's programme. If you've got a view on audio description you'd like to share, please do get in touch. And also get in touch about anything else you'd like to talk about. As I say, it's your programme. That's it for the Weekly Connect this week. I'm back next week at the same time. And remember, if it's Mondays at 1 o'clock, it's the Weekly Connect. Thanks for listening.